Well, all right. Happy Friday, man. Welcome. Triple Happy Hour. Friday, 5 p.m. and time for American Hit Radio. 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. I am Tom Ryan with you for the next hour, if you'll bear with me. And my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi, taking care of the boards and making sure that I get my act together with the music that we're going to be playing. On Fridays, we've been playing a series for a long time now, which called How Music Changed, where we focus on a specific artist or a topic, subject, style, all that sort of thing, to more or less try to cover the incredible myriad history of recorded music. Some of them we go way back, and now we're more or less on a contemporary artist, somebody who I think is hugely influential. We just started last week covering the music of Jimi Hendrix. So this is part two in that series. Gonna call this Session Man, because like last week, we had a lot of history to cover before he was actually playing music. So there's a lot of talk on that show, probably a lot less talk on this one. But I want to cover the work that Jimmy was doing before he became a famous solo artist. And you're going to be hearing a good number of songs from exactly that period of his life. So before we move on to the proper career of Jimi Hendrix as an independent artist, I figured we'd take a deep dive into the session work that kept him alive before he became a star. Now, most of the songs we're going to play and the bands that you're going to hear today are forgotten. So I think it's worthwhile to take a look behind the curtain, so to speak, to hear what Jimmy was up to before he started to write and sing his own material. One of those artists, now forgotten, was called Frank Howard and the Commanders. We ended last week with a couple of tracks that Jimmy recorded with Little Richard that he ended up leaving because Richard kept fining him because he kept thinking that Jimmy was like stealing his spotlight. And so Jimmy moved on, found himself with Frank Howard and the Commanders, and signed with a manager also, by the way, but the manager was more or less neglecting him at this point because he didn't know what to do with a guitar player. He's like, you know, listen, you know, there's certain people that you can figure out what to do with them, but if you're a guy like Jimmy, what do you, you know, how do you promote him? So he didn't really know what to do. So Jimmy ends up as a band member for Frank Howard and the Commanders. And we're going to play like the A side and the B side, or actually the B side first and then the A side of the single by Frank Howard and the Commanders. It came about because I mentioned last week that, you know, he was on an army base with Billy Cox, and they had teamed up and had been in a couple of bands together in their time. And Billy Cox had been writing songs for this band, for Frank Howard. And so he suggested that Jimmy would be great for joining the band, and that's exactly what did happen. But the problem was that they brought in a disc jockey whose name was Hoss Allen to do the production, and he wanted nothing to do with Jimi Hendrix. He basically wasn't impressed with him at all. According to Frank Howard, he said, all Hoss wanted Jimmy to do was play a simple rhythm while our other guitarist, Johnny Jones, played lead. But Hoss didn't like what he was hearing from Jimmy, so he'd turn his mic down and cut him in and then cut him out. Later on, of course, that same DJ had said, if I had known Jimmy was going to be so successful, I would have let him get him as wild as he wanted to. Yeah, well, dude, that's the way it works, isn't it? So the first track up by Frank Howard and the Commanders is called I'm So Glad. And we'll let that segue into the A side, which is called I'm Sorry For You. You might have to listen closely to pick up Jimi Hendrix's work on these two tracks.
Glad, my baby, that I'm doubt every chance. Each week you had a new romance. I should have known you couldn't be true. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. When I was gone, you were on the go. Just because I said nothing to you, oh, I feel so sorry for you. But if you're happy doing these things, it's best I not be around. Cause your love has grown stale, and if I stay, I know I'll go to jail. My so-called friends were slipping with you, and all the time I knew you weren't true. Remember, you've got to pay for what you do. Oh, I feel sorry for you. I feel sorry, baby. I'm feeling so sorry. Come on and help me, baby.
That's getting pretty tough to even pull out the bits of those tracks by Frank Howard and the Commanders that include Hendrix, because of the fact that the producer wanted really, you know, nothing to do with Hendrix. But that's not the way that other people heard him. I mean, we mentioned last week, but the fact that he was signed to a contract with a guy named Juggy Murray for Sue Records, because he figured that he might be able to do something. But like I said earlier, I mean, you know, he was thinking that maybe, oh, yeah, this guy's going to be like Ike Turner. But Jimmy wasn't like Ike Turner at all. You know, Ike Turner was a songwriter and a producer and everything else. Jimmy was a guitar player, and he didn't know how to promote him. So he never even recorded a single note, even though we had him under contract. So Jimmy's signed to Sue Records and getting absolutely zero credit or even work for that. So he ends up recording with the Isley Brothers for a while, which we played those songs last week as well. But he knew that he really had to move on. So he ends up bumping into this guy named Curtis Knight at the Americana Hotel in New York City in the lobby. And they really became like quick friends. And they decide, then they get to say, you know, basically come in to try my band out, man. Why don't you come in? You're a guitar player. I'll bring you down. You can play with me. So they do. They go to this place called Studio 76, which is run by a guy named Ed Chalpin. Now, the problem was, Jimmy, I mean, we were talking about poverty and how things get up. At this point in time, Jimmy's Fender guitar is in a pawn shop. He doesn't even have his own guitar anymore. You know, times are that hard on him. So Curtis Knight had to lend him a Dan Electro. And this is the track that they recorded for the very first time they got together in the studio. It's Curtis Knight and the Squires, as it was released. It's called How Would You Feel?
This is a song that asks a question, and if you listen, I think you'll get the message. If you walk
walked into a restaurant, you were hungry, you had the money to get yourself something to eat. Yeah. Somebody told you to go around to the back door and get it, even though they wasn't gonna give it to you free. Children by the hand, and you wanna guide them and protect them on the very first day in school. Yeah. I just wanna ask one question. Do you think that all the little children should be punished for the sins of all the older fools?
Yeah, yeah, tell me.
Look at you funny, but he takes the money, and then he says, hey, you're not one of us, sit in the back of the bus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
About people fighting and dying somewhere in a foreign land. Oh, yeah. But right here, people are fighting and dying, and all they're trying to do is get equal rights as the Constitution planned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell me.
Remind you of anything? I mean, I wonder what Bob Dylan thought of when he heard that one. I mean, it's obviously a takeoff of like a Rolling Stone. There's no doubt about that. But with that track, Jimi Hendrix earned his very first label credit as an arranger for the song. And it was released as a single in April of 1966. And throughout 65 and 66, Hendrix continued to work as a guitarist for hire, accepting positions with R&B stalwarts like Joey D and the Starlighters, and of course, in this instance, Curtis Knight and the Squires. I was always kept in the background, Jimmy said, but I was thinking all the time about what I wanted to do. Hendrix's tenure with Curtis Knight and the Squires was unique to any other professional experience that he had enjoyed up to this point in time, as Knight shared the spotlight with the guitarist, allowing him much more leeway than other musicians had. Here's an example of that. This is actually the first composer credit that Jimmy ever got for writing a song, came out with the release of this track entitled Hornet's Nest.
Thank you.
freak out. Oh, man, Jimmy was definitely freaking out on that one. That's his track. The first one, I think, that he ever had a songwriting credit for, but it's called Hornet's Nest. Now, this guy, Ed Chalpin, who was recording the Squires at this time in the studio, worked at Studio 76, had something that he called PPX Enterprises, and he liked what he heard. So he offered Jimi Hendrix a contract, like one page, just put it in front of him, to, quote, produce and play and or sing exclusively for PPX Enterprises for 3 years in exchange for a 1% royalty and $1 up front. $1. Jimmy probably didn't even read it. He just signed it, and that was that. I mean, a friend of Jimmy said he would have signed a contract with anybody who came along that had a dollar and a pencil. I mean, he was starving. He kept having to put his own guitar into hock. So they say that, you know, he probably wasn't too concerned with the fact that he was already signed to that guy, Juggy Murray, with Sue Records, because he hadn't done a damn thing for Jimmy. Nothing. Absolutely zero. Now, that would eventually cause problems, because eventually Chalpin would start to take his rights to Jimi Hendrix and start to re-record all sorts of material on a seemingly endless barrage of compilation records and cheap releases. But here's one of the tracks that was also recorded by Curtis Knight and the Squires with Chalpin. This one is called Knock Yourself Out. We'll be right back. pretty hot. I mean, now, that track, as I said, that's called Knock Yourself Out. Now, you might have heard in the very beginning of that track some studio talk at the beginning. Nothing that particular, but there was some. It's likely that when they were recording, they kept the tape rolling all that time. And as the performances are obviously live in the studio, that's what's going down here. And we're talking a little bit about this guy, Ed Chalpin, signing Jimmy to a second contract and how he was a disreputable character. This is rather interesting. Chalpin auditioned Curtis Knight and the Squires essentially at his studio. That's what these songs were. And he signed the group, including Hendrix, to recording contracts. But according to Chalpin, at no time during this process did Jimi Hendrix inform him of the recording contract that he had already signed with Juggy Murray at Sue Records. Except for this now. This actually turned up. This is going to be a 50. Like I said, you heard that there was some studio talk on the beginning of that last track. Well, they probably had the tape rolling. And listen to this conversation where you can hear Jimmy absolutely making it 100% clear that they can't use his name on the track. Check this out.
Roll when you are. Take one. Really remember.
But you can't just, you know, like if you use this for you can't, you know, put my name on the thing, like on
no,
the
no, 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 hell no.
Now listen, now he can't do this though. Okay. Edward, can you hear me?
I don't know.
In other words, you can't, you know, like, you can't use my name for none of this stuff, though, right?
You can't use his name for any of this.
Hey, don't worry about it.
No, but can you? No, seriously, you know.
It's all right, don't worry about it.
Huh?
I won't use it, don't worry about it.
Yeah, so there you see. I mean, he obviously told the guy, you can't use my name on any of it. And he signs him anyway, and he ends up stealing his music. Well, let me remind you, by the way, you're listening to 90.3 WHBC, WHBC HD, the voice of Nassau Community College. And this is the How Music Changed show every Friday between 5 and 6. Now, getting back to this character, Ed Chalpin and Jimi Hendrix. Like his other work experiences, Hendrix's tenure with Curtis Knight and the Squires was brief. Knight's limited popularity earned them club dates throughout New York and New Jersey, but these weren't sufficient enough to sustain Hendrix financially. And so, with two recording contracts signed and nothing to show for it, he looked for work with other groups. Hendrix found himself occasional employment in the form of short tours and recording session work with King Curtis and others. I just got tired, man, Hendrix says of this time. I just couldn't stand it anymore. I can't tell you the number of times it hurt me to play the same notes, the same beat. I was just kind of a shadowy figure up there, out of sight of the real meaning. I wanted my own scene, making my own music. But in the meantime, Ed Chalpin is taking tracks that Hendrix played on and doing things and not telling him that he's doing them. For example, it's not an absolute fact, but this track, credited to Jane Mansfield, was recorded by Ed Chalpin in his studio, and Chalpin himself insists that it is Hendrix who played guitar and bass on this song. And it's not unlikely, because what Chalpin would do is he had this history of licensing out instrumental tracks that he had recorded, like the ones we had just heard that he had did with Hendrix, to other artists so they could dub their own vocals on them. So it's very possible that Jimi Hendrix didn't even know that he was playing on a Jane Mansfield song, because he had nothing to do with it except for the fact that he was playing on the background track, and then he sold the track to Jane Mansfield. So, which, by the way, he released only after her fatal car accident as a way to cash in on that. So it's the whole thing is suspicious and weird, but it probably is Jimmy playing guitar in back of Gene Mansfield on this track entitled Suey.
My back crack. Makes my liver quiver. I'm giving it all I got. I'm doing it good like I knew I could. Puts a dip in my hip. Boogaloo, boogaloo, I gotta do it just for you.
I think I can safely say that that will be the weirdest track that we hear in this Jimi Hendrix series, without a doubt. Suey, Gene Mansfield doing the vocals, probably Jimmy playing guitar and bass on that, although he recorded it as an instrumental and it got sold without his knowing it, likely. Now, we had mentioned that he was basically getting together with King Curtis and his band for a while. And Jimmy got invited to join the band on tour, and he also got involved with them at Atlantic Studios in New York City. You know, King Curtis was a pretty big band. You know, they're on Atlantic. So they actually recorded a track together called Help Me Get the Feeling, and sort of like a garage rock tune. I think some people compare it to Gloria by them, you know, Van Morrison's Them. The track was credited to Ray Sharp, who sang the lead vocals. And eventually, well, you can hear it for yourself. Eventually, the song ended up being used for an Aretha Franklin track called Save Me. You might recognize that as well. But here is the original version with King Curtis, sung by Ray Sharp. It's called Help Me Get the Feeling. And you know what? Let's segue that into the B-side, a King Curtis track called Instant Groove.
Help me get this feeling out. Very easy, all you gotta do is follow me. I want you to clap your hands. And those of you who don't feel like clapping your hands, I want you to pat your feet, snap your fingers, shake your shoulders, or whatever else you want to shake. But I want you to help me feel it, baby. I think I've got that feeling. Makes you wanna dance. So come on over here now, baby, 'cause we gonna take a chance. I know she looks so fine. She dances like an angel now. She really moves on time. You know, she helps me get that good feeling, baby. Whenever she's around, she can do the jerk now. Better than anybody else in town. So come on over here, baby, and I want you to help me. Help me, baby. Help me. Help me feel it now.
Now, if you're paying attention, you might have noticed that those two tracks we just played were pretty much the exact same song. Help Me Get the Feeling was released as Ray Sharp, being the artist, in 1966 with the Atlantic recording, with Jimmy's role being mixed down considerably. But King Curtis was part of that band. It was King Curtis's band. 1969, Jimmy is a superstar, and King Curtis decides to basically pull that track out and this time brings Jimmy to the forefront and releases it with King Curtis doing the vocal and calls it Instant Groove. He's not a stupid man, King Curtis. He knows exactly, you know, what works and what doesn't. And it was around this time, too, that Jimmy ends up getting work with the saxophone player from Curtis Knight and the Squires. The guy's name was Lonnie Youngblood. Curtis started to lose interest in the band, Youngblood later explained. And at the same time, I had a couple of job offers to be a band leader. I know I didn't want to play in his band forever, so I told Jimmy and a couple of the guys in the band about it, and they said, let's go. From there, we just started to play a few gigs as the Blood Brothers. I was an enterprising guy, and I wanted to cut me some records. They end up putting together a song that probably influenced Jimmy when he started writing his own songs, because the song that we're going to hear now, recorded by the Icemen, was called My Girl, She's a Fox.
Ta-da, ta-da.
than a fine.
She's got something,
Lord,
no, that drives me out of my mind. She's got a nice personality, and if you ever saw her, you will agree that she's a fox.
Songwriters for that is credited to the Poindexter brothers. By the way, they are the same guys that wrote the song Thin Line Between Love and Hate for the Persuaders, eventually covered by Chrissy Hynde as well at one point. Well, like Jimmy said, he goes, I had these ideas and sounds in my brain, but I needed people to do it with, and they were hard to find. I had friends with me in Harlem, and I'd say, come on down to the Village so we can get something together. But they were lazy, they were scared, plus they didn't think they were going to get paid. I said, quite naturally you won't get paid on the audition because it's us going down there being aggressive. It's us filtering down to them. So there's a few things you have to give up in the beginning. They didn't want to do that, so I went down to the Village and started playing like I wanted. Which is interesting because, as you hear, they talk about it themselves, about how Youngblood was saying that, who Jimmy had sung with the Iceman. He goes, I knew that Jimmy didn't want to play in his band forever. Well, and I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong thing here again, but he just said that he found that Jimmy was beginning to get tired of what he was doing. He goes, we ran out of money and Jimmy changed his way of thinking. His concept was changing in the middle of what we were about. I witnessed the transformation. I saw him as R&B and other blues kind of things. He loved that music, but after a while, he didn't feel it anymore. Hendrix basically said, I couldn't imagine myself for the rest of my life in a shiny mohair suit with the patent leather shoes and a patent leather hairdo to match. I didn't hear any guitar players doing anything new. I was bored out of my mind. I wanted my own scene. I wanted my own music. I was starting to see that you could create a whole new world with an electric guitar because there isn't a sound like it. Here's one of those tracks that he was recording at around that time of period of transition with a woman named Rosa Lee Brooks. It's called My Diary. I
she found my diary.
Leave us. We only got time for one more, so I'm going to drop one more track, and we will be back with the real Jimi Hendrix and the Experience. That's where we're going to be picking up next week. So hope you can tune in next Friday. Meanwhile, we'll leave you with this track credited to Jimmy Norman, with Jimmy on it. It's called "The Little Old Groove Maker."